We do it where we say names and then you go back and you say what it is.
This is Jason M.
This is Jason K.
And this is Context Free.
Having listened to and enjoyed the first season of Serial, been very bored with what I made it through on the second season of Serial, and listened to a fair bit of This American Life, I disagree, based on the first two episodes of S-Town, that it is playing to the same thing.
Yeah, it's fiction, right? Like, it's this fictive thing, right? Like, isn't it supposed to be fiction?
Oh, I thought it's real.
Is it real? I thought it was supposed to be fiction.
No, I'm pretty sure it's real.
Is it real? Really? Okay. I don't know.
If that is fiction, then it's worse by a lot than you think. I really hope it's
real. I'm asking the internet right now, is S-Town a food? Why do you hope it's real?
Because if you made up that guy in the first episode and the first two episodes... That's terrible.
Nonfiction limited series about rural Alabama. All right, so it is. I mean, it came across as fiction to me.
Doesn't that change your opinion of it?
I'm not convinced that reading something in a blog post on Rolling Stone has convinced me that it's not fiction. But
I'm pretty sure it's nonfiction. They've been reporting on it for like 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so it's nonfiction. There was something vaguely gross about it, right?
Well, that's what exactly, right? I mean, I've only listened to two episodes, but it was like grossly Southern Gothic so far,
right?
And I'm like, if you're making this up, this feels like a caricature of what Northern people want to believe about the South,
right?
But the fact that it's real, it still feels exploitative in a way, but.
Oh, yeah.
But not as bad as if you made it up. That's all I'm saying, is that it's not as bad as if you made that up and sold that as a story. That feels worse.
Okay. It's worse. It's still...
By a lot, in my opinion.
I don't know. I'm really interested. So we listen to this, right, because we belong to a meetup who's going to talk about it, and I'm really interested what everyone's going to say. Because I think they're going to love it, and I think I'm going to hate it, but I'm...
And I've only listened to two episodes, yeah. And I'm not going to spoil anything, even from the second or first episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not something that's made for me.
What does that mean, it's not made for you?
I'm not, I don't know, it's...
You say that like, you know...
Well, everyone's in a demographic, like, target... points thing,
but not
right?
Made like for you. Like it's a pink dress, not made for you.
I mean, it definitely didn't fit. It didn't fit.
I mean, it's reporting. I mean, is it the editing that bothers you? Is it the fact that they did the story that bothers you? What choice? What is the choice that makes it not made for you?
I don't know. Just the fact that it feels like this entirely exploitive thing, right? Like, and there are a number of kind of.
Because it feeds to every stereotype?
A little bit, and I don't know. I really haven't analyzed my kind of personal reaction to it, but it just, I did not enjoy it.
Do you enjoy any real crime shows? Did you enjoy the first season of Serial?
I did. I enjoyed the first season of Serial, and I don't think...
Did you watch The Jinx on HBO?
I have not.
Okay.
Yeah, and mainly because I think... What happens at the end of that series was kind of talked about on social media enough that I felt like a lot of the suspense was ruined for me. But
still, I knew ahead of time as well, but it still was fine.
It was still good? Okay.
It was still worth seeing.
Yeah. No, I guess I don't like true crime. I mean, I don't know. So Serial, I like Serial because there was this kind of the first season, not the second season. I couldn't make it through the second season.
I couldn't either.
So the first season struck me as really a story about whether justice has been served or not. While there are some, there's a lot of detail in it, and there's a lot of kind of following things up, and a little bit of kind of quasi salaciousness, right? It's really not the subject matter, right? It's really like, did this guy do it or not? And did this guy get railroaded? Was he treated? Did he have the right representation? Right. Right. Mm-hmm. It's really a meta. So for me, I think I enjoyed it because of the meta aspect of like, does our justice system produce justice, or is it really good at putting people in prison?
Mm-hmm.
And my bias is that it's really good at putting people in prison. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an aspect where it's going towards the bias that I have. And so I'm maybe enjoyed it because there was some political alignment there. Mm. Whereas in season two, I'm just like,
yeah, I don't know.
The choices that, that he made in season two, I was unable to identify with.
Same. Yeah. I couldn't.
It was just like, so then you just walked away. Like it felt like a long con job. And so I couldn't buy it in. So, So now I'm interested to see what your reaction is. See if you love S Town at the end now.
Well, I listened to the first two episodes this morning. I got up earlier than I wanted to, and I was like, all right, I'll listen to these now. And I think I'll probably charge through it in the next couple days, just because I'm a little curious to see where it goes. I mean, don't tell me if I'm right or wrong, but it seems like what I thought the what was might not be the what in terms of what it's about.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's one of these, there's a lot of documentaries out there that, well, I don't know if there's a lot, but one documentary I can think of that I really enjoyed way back was Capturing the Freedmans, where the documentary was originally supposed to be about this guy documenting guy who was a clown at kids' birthday parties and was like the best clown birthday party clown in New York or something. And then he finds out more about the family, and then the entire documentary takes this like 90 degree turn into something completely different, and that's what it's about. So that's what feels like what's going to happen here, from what I can tell. And I like that. I mean, I like plot twists. I like that sort of stuff is interesting, but the whole tone of it and the characters within it, and sort of it feels a bit like, oh, let's put the liberal Jewish reporter down in, you know, middle of nowhere, Alabama, and isn't this awkward? And it feels a little bit like that so far. Like there was a lot of focus on his awkwardness in the first couple episodes of being in this environment that was very foreign and felt, he used danger and threatening a lot, right?
Yeah, well, so he's kind of choosing how he, I mean, this is a highly edited sort of structured thing, right? So so they have the choice of how they're going to present it. And so they're building, you know, they're building story arc and building twists and turns into the way that they edit.
But they play up the menace.
Sure.
Right.
Which that's the I part also that felt wrong. A little bit gross.
That's the gross part to me, because I feel like they play up the menace.
Oh, we're going to the South where people are crazy and they're going to murder me. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they play up the menace to kind of feed into a stereotype. And that's the part that felt not honest to me.
Well, it felt not honest, and it also felt like I think in 2017, what year is this?
2017. Yeah.
I think
middle. Will you ever forget this year?
I was trying to be funny, but I was failing. I think there's a certain level where we're really uncomfortable when people are making fun of minority groups or the poor or whatever it is, right? And this is poor white people, which will lead us into talking about the last election here if we're not careful.
Right. And I also want to know, I need to know more about John McLemore, the guy that starts off the first episode. So I need to know more about him to kind of continue this. So maybe that's where we can kind of leave it on that. I don't want to give away spoilers. B, I don't know enough about that guy to comment yet.
But yeah.
He's an odd duck.
Well, but for sure. So you mentioned Capturing the Freedmans. I would mention Exit Through the Gift Shop, right? Like, I think it's a very...
that's another good turn type of documentary. Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's why you do documentaries, right? Like, if you go show a documentary about someone who's terrible and it turns out they are terrible and there's nothing redeeming about them, like, why would you watch that documentary, right?
Well, it's educational.
True.
I mean,
But what you want is the twist. What you want is the reveal.
You want
right?
the reveal, yeah.
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 So, yeah, documentaries are awesome.
I was going to talk a little bit about from the last episode when I just, you know, deleted Facebook and Twitter off my phone. I've not installed them since. I've actually...
on your phone.
On my phone, correct. I've not been on Facebook at all since then. And I still go on Twitter during the workday to check news because I kind of use that as news, but I don't have it on my phone. So I don't really check Twitter on my phone. So I feel like I'm not as drenched in the news as I was before, which is good.
Is that what Twitter is? Twitter is news?
Yeah, I follow Facebook? Twitter is news. I follow a lot of journalists and
okay. And
news service type things. So a journalist on Washington Post, for instance, that would be how I get a link to some story. You know, or the Atlantic. Whereas Facebook, I don't miss at all. Like, I post a few pictures on Instagram. I mean, I never really used Instagram before, but I was like, I still have this kind of need to just post a picture here or there. So I've been posting a few pictures to Instagram. I don't have as many people on Instagram that I follow as I do on Facebook, so I see less stuff. But it's like, oh, I'll check it every other day or something. Or if I have something to post a picture, I'll post a picture. But in terms of Facebook content, I feel like that was just like lopping something off that I don't even miss whatsoever.
So your life has completely fallen apart.
Totally. No. I found, for instance, I went to a conference a weekend ago. It was like, got there on Thursday. It was like a Friday, Saturday, left on Sunday. Way less time than I probably normally would spend where I was, you know, alone and checking my phone.
Mm.
I like talked to people more. I found I wasn't just sort of retreating into that. Like I would, if you know, you have those like at a conference a lot of times where speakers up at the front, obviously on stage or whatever, and then they'll have a bunch of banquet rectangular tables with computers. You might have two or three people at a table. So I would talk to my neighbor and just chat and start conversations more rather than like, oh, let me see what nonsense is on Facebook. So in that sense, it was a real positive.
So you're not carrying your corner with that you can kind of retreat into around with you, right? Like that's what you're using the phone for in that context, right? Is like, oh, now I'm going to go into my corner for a while, right? And so,
right. Since
you didn't have your corner, you thought you were more social. Did you?
I was more social, yeah.
Did you present anything? I know you were talking about working at a thing where you were going to give. Questions or something. I don't remember if that worked out.
No, that was all ahead of time stuff. There was a nerdy trivia show on Apple and iOS topics, and there were probably like 12 different categories, and I wrote the questions for two of them. It was part of like the nighttime. There was like an open bar food. Like that was part of the entertainment. That was a segment of it where they did this and gave away prizes. So I just volunteered and did that. I just, in the last, I don't know if this is what this is coming from, but I've just found there's been a number of things recently in the last 4 to 6 weeks where I've seen a request for volunteers for something. And instead of just doing nothing, I've been raising my hand. So I've done that a number of times. So I did that twice with the conference. So I wrote questions and I also participated in a user group, like a focus group website. And then there were two different things, one each with my kids' schools, that one of them is a recurring thing on Fridays, and another thing was a one-off day on Friday where it was like a service day at school. And so I did those independently. So it's like three different things in the last like 6 weeks or so where I said, yeah, I'm going to do this thing, as opposed to just sort of staying quiet and staying in my own space. Certainly not world-changing things, but I feel like it's a good step for me to just put myself out there a little bit. Doesn't mean I still don't have anxiety at, you know, the hour before these things happen, but they turn out just fine. And it's been good.
So you've been more civically minded, right? Like, or you have been more participatory.
More participatory, I would say. I've been more open to experiences that aren't my normal course of the day.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I've been strongly thinking about putting together a talk to do at an iOS conference that, you know, maybe like 360 IDEV in September or something. I should look and see when the call for papers is. I could probably submit an abstract for that of something I want to do. And so these are just little things where try to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. I mean, I'm not going and talking to people I don't necessarily not talk to or anything like that. I'm just not being quiet. Yeah. I don't know that it's civically minded. I'm just trying to put myself in situations that aren't my normal routine.
Well, I mean, you're stretching yourself and participating in the communities that you participate with, right? Like, and instead of
right.
coasting and being someone who's absorbing, passively absorbing content right. in those communities. So.
Right. I'm not putting myself into communities that I'm not already a part of, though.
Right? Yeah, you haven't joined the laser quilting bee or something, right? So, yeah.
I've not. No. Does that exist?
I mean, it could.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, you know what? It's the internet. It exists. So... It seems like net positive. You didn't cave in. You didn't collapse and reinstall everything back in.
Not only that, there was like zero temptation to.
None whatsoever. You didn't go get your phone out at the grocery store or something like that.
Well, when I do, I'll usually just maybe I'll still check like Flipboard.
Oh, okay.
For news. I'm not saying I don't use my phone to wall myself off occasionally. I mean, sure. I mean, I haven't gone from 60 to zero in that regard. But I think it's just been less.
So Flipboard's a way to create your own magazine, right? Like I think of it as kind of Instaboardy or Instapapery. Is that not right? Like I never really used it, so.
Oh, you can, but I just go on there and I mean, it's just like news.
Okay.
And I just flip through.
So you essentially read a news article as opposed to Twitter, right?
Yes.
So something a little more condensed and thought through, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, so I still do that. I mean, it's interesting how my son, who is in sixth grade, so he's going to be 12 next month, and my wife and I were talking about getting him a phone. And pretty much just about every sixth grader has a phone of some sort, whether it's a $20 phone from King Soopers or
wow.
something nicer. You know, I mean, I don't know what percent, but I would say 5 to 10% do not have phones.
Right.
Right. And so we were thinking about giving fun. I mean, it's worked out just fine. I mean, there's been times when it'd be nice, but he generally will borrow his friend's phone and be like, you know, hey, this is me. And that works. But what's interesting, it's almost like he has the same instincts that I had. I was a very, very late adopter to getting a phone. I did not get any type of phone whatsoever till 2007 or 2008.
Okay.
Right. Which is really late. I mean, the iPhone was already out and I didn't even have a flip phone. And my instinct was always like, I don't want that thing. And I've never expressed that to him. Like I've never talked about to him or discouraged him from, or said, oh, that's a waste. And he's like, please don't get me a phone for my birthday, which I don't know. Is that odd? I don't really know, but we were like, well, why, you know, why? And he's like, I just don't want social pressure of people asking me for my number. I don't want that availability. like, wow. Okay.
That's a incredibly thoughtful response at that
it
age.
It is, but it's you know, pretty different from, I mean, it's definitely how I would have been at that age. I mean, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have wanted one either. I mean, I would have wanted like video games or something, but I wouldn't have wanted.
You want the apps, you don't want the phone.
I don't want the phone, right? Well, and he has a Kindle, which he reads on and
right.
plays Minecraft on and. That's fine, but he doesn't want the social aspect of, you know, I don't know. I probably shouldn't step and say that he doesn't want people to bother him on it, but maybe that's it. I'm not sure.
Right. Well, I mean, it's different too. I think there are a lot of kids that are kind of stuck at home and that sort of thing. And your kids get to go out and seem like they have a lot of like either sports or other kind of opportunities.
They do
their
stuff.
Schools.
Yeah.
I mean, and,
yeah.
They're not. He's not like an isolated kid who's like wants to talk to his friends on the phone, right? Like, so yeah, interesting. I didn't. I don't think I had a phone until like 2005 or 2006.
Yeah.
I was maybe later than that. I was resistant too, just because it was like a way for people to call me, and like I had a work pager and that sort of, and that mm-hmm. was bad enough,
right?
So yeah, I guess it was a little bit similar, but. No, that's a super thoughtful kind of the thoughts of the obligations you're letting other people put on you is a
right.
super
exactly.
Most 30-year-olds don't have that.
That's one of the best parts about not having the Facebook is I don't even entertain any of those thoughts of like, oh, like did someone like this or should I have liked that? Like, it's just not even a, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. And you have this meta thought, like, is it weird if I like this one? Or is it like, you know, oh no, should I be looking like what? Yeah. There's no like meta analysis of these things that really don't matter at all.
Right. And I think some people are wired where they can just like not let that even phase them or whatever. I'm not that way. Like I cannot be a part of something like that and not think about it too much.
Not analyze it.
It's not possible.
Not put it into buckets.
Exactly. No, it's not possible. As much as I'd like to. So for me, it's easier to just be like, let that be over there. And if someone wants to send me a picture or something, they'll text it to me. And like my sister, if she wants to send me a picture of her and the kids, cool. I mean, that's great.
Right.
Send me a picture and we'll chat about it that way. And that works for me. So I feel like I still have plenty of social time with my friends. I'm able to, that's another thing is that, you know, there's this creeping thing, you know, you'll see this. I mean, I've done this, you do this of like, even when you're physically being, you're with somebody of checking the phone. Right. And having less of an impulse to do that, I feel makes me be a little bit more present, helps me be a little bit more present. Just during dinner. I mean, we have a big, you know, my wife and I have always, we eat dinner as a family, like a lot. And, you know, and I think that that's been important for us as a family. And, you know, we both, I mean, I've broken the rules sometimes, but we both don't like sit there and sit on our phones during dinner. And we try to actually use that time to talk to each other.
Right.
And I think that me trying to do that, whether I said like, whether it was at the conference, whether I have friends over, whether I'm having dinner with my family, wherever that is, for me to not only be more present, but to also set a better example of being present makes me feel like I'm participating more with people rather than with this screen. So if I could get rid of the whole thing, I would. I would. I really, but I don't feel like I can, but I feel like I'm taking better steps. So I'm happy with the experiment so far, and I plan to continue it.
That being present thing is pretty important. I think we tend to use the phone as a drug to when you're tired or whatever else sometimes to really kind of zone yourself out.
Or just letting yourself be bored sometimes is okay.
Well, it's kind of how you get to be creative in a lot of ways, right? Like a lot of creativity comes out of these unconscious kind of background created things. And if you don't have any time to do that and sit there and listen to music for a while or sit there and, you know, lackadaisically lay on your couch or something, you're not going to have the mental cycles to do that kind of background work and be creative. That's my two cents. Like I hate mowing the lawn a lot.
Really? You don't have that much lawn to
I have
mow.
Almost no lawn.
Yeah.
The upside.
You could put in that AstroTurf.
I've thought about it. Actually, yeah. My neighbor.
My father-in-law has that.
Yeah. My neighbor next door has taken out all of her lawn. She just has brick. Yeah. And so she's done this so she doesn't have to do maintenance. And I'm very sympathetic. Yeah.
The turf they have nowadays is actually, it doesn't look.
Looks pretty good.
I don't know if I'd say pretty good, but it doesn't look as bad as you'd think. You could definitely do it in the backyard. I don't know if I'd put it in my front, but you could do it in the backyard.
Oh, I have almost no front yard, too. I've only got the grass and the strip between the road and the sidewalk. So
yeah, I have a lot more lawn than you.
I need to kill that, yeah. But I, you know, when I'm working on a story or something, I think that's a place to background do stuff because you're doing this kind of mechanical task that doesn't require a whole lot of focus, right? And you're just kind of, it's a little bit like driving, I guess, but hopefully you're a little more focused driving depending on what your drive is like. But it is kind of mechanical, and I think that's really good for just being a person, right? Like it gives you some mental downtime to do something else. Maybe we need more.
I'm surprised you don't listen to podcasts while you're mowing your lawn.
I do every once in a while, and then I feel bad.
Wow.
No, not really.
seems like a thing you would do.
You know, I do try to turn them off from time to time. I think you can't do that 100% of the time.
Okay, I agree.
though occasionally I'm guilty of not taking the earbuds out. But yeah, usually mowing the lawn is really loud, and you have to crank your headphones, and it's probably not good for you. So, but yeah, mowing the lawn, mechanical things. We need to bring back those washboards. We just get rid of the laundry machine. So at one point we were talking about this last election, unfortunately, because it keeps coming up because we can't escape it mentally.
Although I'm escaping it more and more, I find.
Yeah, because you don't have Facebook.
Yes. I'm not saying I've escaped it, but where it was taking up a huge percentage of my free time thinking, it is now taking up way less. Like, I mean, can't even really compare.
So is it just your thought, and there's less Trump anxiety, less Trump anxiety?
No, it's more just like, I mean, it's just that whole realization of, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago of, you know, it's that drinking the poison and hoping the other person dies thing of just doing bad things yourself and thinking that somehow that's going to change the other side of the equation, but all you're doing is poisoning yourself.
Right.
So it's that. It's like once you come to the realization that you're just poisoning your own day and your own thoughts and your own whatever, and it's not a positive thing, well, then it's time to figure out what you can do to have a more positive thing rather than focusing on the negative. It's just, you know, going back to the S-Town guy, I mean, it's like that guy's just completely focused on everything sucks.
Right.
Right. And I mean, that mindset.
He lives in an S-Town.
He lives in an S-Town. but of everything being negative, of you can't find the positive parts of things, it's like, yeah, I mean, this entire administration and situation is a joke. It's ridiculous. It borders on like the absurd, if it's not absurd. I mean, it's just that dumb. But it's where we're at. And so hopefully we learn from it and we do something about it when we can. But I'm not going to sit here and have a shitty day every day because of it.
Well, so what we had talked about, right, is I had a certain level for a certain level of sympathy for the people that have essentially gotten played, right, by voting the way that they have. And I think this comes up a lot in political discourse. There's a lot of kind of really, I would say, kind of condescending tones about, you know, why do people vote Republican? Because, you know, they're voting against their own interests because they're stupid, right? Like that's a.
Oh, liberals do the same thing.
Yeah, no. I'm trying to acknowledge that I know that that is a thing, and that's not what hopefully not what I'm talking about, right? What I'm talking about is like the situation where what was it the inauguration? Was it the inauguration where they were waving Russian flags?
No, that was at CPAC.
Okay, so at CPAC, someone had handed out Russian...
The Conservative Conference, Political Action Conference, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, okay, so someone had handed out Russian flags with Trump stamped on them.
Gold lettering.
Gold, of course, yeah. No, naturally. And there's all these people with these just joyous looks on their face, you know, waving their Russian flags. And I express some sympathy for these people, right? Like, because they've kind of been doubly duped, right? Like, they think this guy that they vote for is going to do all these good things. While I'm probably closer to the conservative spectrum than you are, I don't think he's going to do a lot of good things. And I don't think he's going to do the good things they're hoping that he's going to do, right? So I feel like they've been duped from that perspective. They've also been duped by someone handing them a Russian flag.
Well, that's just funny. That was just funny. But I don't believe they've been duped. That's the thing. I believe that they're getting what they deserve because they've been buying into the talk radio and all of this nonsense for so long and just wanting to identify with it that I have no sympathy because they're getting exactly what they deserve.
They're getting what they asked for.
They're getting what they asked for.
They have both houses of Congress. They have the presidency. All right, smarty pants, you do these great things that you've been planning.
Yeah, and they have. I mean, the administration has no ability to like govern in any sort of coherent way. I mean, they don't even know what their policies are because they have no policies, really. I mean, but no, in terms of the people that you call the duped, I mean, I don't even I don't even think they're necessarily being duped. I think this is, they're enjoying it. I mean, whatever, go for it. Great.
I mean, you know,
I certainly don't feel sympathy for them. I just don't.
I mean, they're winning, right? They're doing so much winning right now that they're getting tired of all their winning.
I mean, whatever. I'm damn sure they would feel no sympathy for me.
Yeah, I don't think that's, yeah. I guess I don't think those are mutually exclusive, right? Like just because someone doesn't reflect that, I don't feel the need to, that doesn't work for me, I guess. I mean, I do think that a lot of these voters have been duped.
What sense?
The way that we all get duped most of the times is we dupe ourselves, right? And because that's how con men work, right? They say things,
yeah.
So you can kind of lead yourself down a path of thinking that you're going to get what you want, whether it's the bag of gold in some long con or.
But it's not like nobody knew they were voting for a reality TV star. I mean, everybody knew that. I just don't see what the duping part is. It's like, I'm pretty sure everyone went into this with their eyes wide open.
Okay.
Right? I mean, we're people like, oh, this is really a politician. And then we find, I mean, it's not like the Wizard of Oz. It's not like the Wizard of Oz and you find out there's a guy behind the curtain.
Right.
We knew up front that he's the guy behind the curtain. I mean, who sells snake oil out of a cart. I mean, we already knew that.
Okay.
Right?
Sure. I think there are a large swath of Trump voters that voted for him because they want to blow things up in the sense that they think everyone else they're going to vote for isn't going to do anything for him. So now they're just going to knock some shit down. But I think some of them are like, well, it can't be as bad as everybody else, right?
I mean, the people that are duped,
they're wrong.
You know who's duped? The people that I think are getting duped are the people who actually believe in Trumpism and are getting a neocon. I mean, those are the people getting duped.
Well, okay. I mean, after the 56 missiles have been sent, we'll see what their reaction is.
Right. I mean, you know, the people who believe in what he would say about healthcare and then get a Paul Ryan,
mm-hmm.
you know, plan.
Right. I mean,
those are the people getting duped, but you're only duped in the sense that you believed that somebody who has obviously no ideology had some policy or ideology.
Yeah.
Like,
but that's how con artistry works, right? Like is that you get someone to convince themselves of something, right? Like, and you feed them little bits and little hints, right? Without ever actually giving up the goods and giving them, you know, real value at the end of the day, right? You give them short-term value and you give them hints. And that's how you con people into things and let them tell themselves stories. That's why there was a lot of people like before the election who were like, Trump's going to be great. You know, he's going to legalize marijuana or he's going to do this or that. Right. And it's because, you know, he just says things and has no ideology. Right. And then we as human beings, you know, we hear something and then we go, oh, you're in this bucket. Right. And we hear what we want in certain ways, or we put people into these pedestals or these buckets or whatever based on what we hear, and it's that confirmation bias. And so from that sense, like I'm a little sympathetic because these people are human beings, right? And they have made, you know, mistakes which suck for everyone. I think, but they made mistakes that I think we're all kind of, it's really easy for us to convince ourselves that we're not able to be caught in those mistakes. And I just don't think that's true. Like, I think, you know, politics is complicated and we're not that smart most of the time. And we're kind of deeply, algorithmic kind of creatures that are following our instincts and our emotions. And is this a really extreme example of you should have known better? Yeah, I buy that. But is that are we completely unable to be captured by this sort of thing in a maybe a different domain or a different with a different presentation? I don't think that's true. I think I don't know. I'm trying to have a little bit of thought towards these people that put themselves in this situation, partially because I think, to me, it seems like I'm not very good at being vindictive against people that haven't like intentionally tried to screw me over, right? Like or try to have I try not to have Schadenfreude, right? Like
well, that's good. I mean, good for you, because
I try. I didn't say I succeed.
I mean, because I enjoy Schadenfreude. I do. I admit it. I do.
I like it on TV shows, right? When the bad guy gets his due, but like when some poor farmer in Alabama or Ohio or something.
Just because I don't feel sympathy doesn't mean that I feel people need a comeuppance, because I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I'm just saying I don't feel sympathy.
That's
fair. There's a difference.
That's fair.
I'm just like, you knew what you were getting. You voted for a reality TV star. Congratulations. We're getting exactly the sort of chaos that we knew we would get. So enjoy it. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well, I don't
feel hate, and I certainly don't feel sympathy. It's just like, you got what you thought. So, you know, here you go.
Water.
But I do enjoy the Schadenfreude of, you know, people that believed he was, you know, this swamp draining nonsense. I mean, that I do find some glee in.
I mean, I admit it's hard. It's hard not to, right? Like in that particular thing where because it's so nonsensical, so outrageous, and so like obviously false, right?
Right.
Like I think it's a little bit curious. I try a little bit from a more of a strategic perspective, right, to try to at least kind of understand. And I guess this goes back to the Against Empathy book, right? Where it's really not about kind of feeling what they're feeling or even being particularly sympathetic, but I do think it's important from a strategic point of view that we understand what got people into that place, because hopefully there's going to be another election in the United States. I'm optimistic that's going to happen. And so when that happens, I think understanding why like Basket of Deplorables was such a bad strategy and understanding kind of where these people are coming from, I think is going to be strategically important in the next election. And so from that perspective, I try to be at least a little sympathetic in the sense that I want to understand where these people are coming from. And yeah.
What will be interesting to me is to see how many politicians and other sorts of government, you know, creatures kind of ruin themselves standing up for Trump.
Oh yeah. How many people Sean Spicer themselves?
Exactly.
They get all Spicered up.
What in the world does Sean Spicer?
They just cover themselves with Sean Spicer, Old Spice.
But what does Sean Spicer go and do, right?
No, he has to commit seppuku after this. I'm pretty sure
he has to pull
out his own entrails on a stage. Right. Because
like, you have no integrity. Like, so how many people ruin their integrity?
Yeah.
You know, by being a part of this, that will be, I mean, those people I definitely will not feel sympathy for, because I mean, they asked for it.
Well, yeah. So they're professionals, creatures. Right? Yeah. Whose job it is to have an ideology and immediately abandon their ideology for, you know, the way the wind happens to be blowing.
I mean, I suppose they'll get think tank jobs or whatever people do, but some of them, I just don't know what they go do.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel Schadenfreude. Like specifically
successfully
politicians
lured you into a feeling of Schadenfreude.
Screw those guys. They deserve what they get. I'm really happy that it's going to be. So it seems like you have escaped the constant sense of emergency, right? Like we had this constant state of emergency that I think people felt post-election. And part of that was like watching the Twitter stream of craziness that,
simply because these people are so damn incompetent. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I'll get scared again when they develop some competency, but the fact that, I mean, just what they did with that healthcare bill was, I mean, pretty damn funny to watch. I gotta say, it's like, you know, it's like a group of people who've been like yelling about a particular thing for 7 years, and then it's like their turn and they can do whatever they want and they can't do it. It's pretty hilarious. I mean, it's just funny.
Well, and then what was the time frames, right? Like, I think one of the criticisms against the ACA was that it was like, it was rammed through too quickly. And then they're like, we got a week or whatever, right? It was that
they did all the, I mean, they took hypocrisy to a new level in terms of the things they complained about. They did like 10 times over. So it's just, you know, that type of incompetence, you know, certainly entertaining to watch, and watch them fall over. Watching Devin Nunes be utterly incompetent and go out and, you know, pretend to be giving a press conference of having gone to the White House for information he's just gotten from the White House that he was briefing the White House about. I mean, that level, that's the sort of guy where it's like, I mean, can we just run anybody against him? I mean, how do you reelect somebody that is that dumb? You know,
so obviously not.
Well, I just don't know how he gets reelected. I just cannot. I mean, the people of Fresno, you know, you must build something better. But it's like that, those level of things where it's like, you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. So that stuff I feel is better. I mean, I take a, you know, every time I read these articles of, you know, oh, they're not getting along, they're fighting, they're gossipy and whatever, and they're kind of pointless. But just the fact that those things dominate so much of the news cycle, and I know that drives Trump crazy, I find that funny.
Oh, So your other piece of schadenfreude has been the internal conflicts.
It's funny, right? Because this guy's so into his image, and right, the fact that his image is so bad, it is funny. So I try to take some comedy out of some of these things. There's a lot of things that are not funny. There's a lot of people, you know, whenever people are getting hurt, I mean, those are things to worry about. I mean, there's a lot of non-funny things that are happening, for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, look at,
without question.
Yeah,
so I don't mean to make too light of that. I'm just saying that there's certain elements of this, of their own bumbling in self-inflicted wounds, that I do find funny.
Well, you can't, like you're saying earlier, like you can't make yourself give yourself a nervous breakdown by kind of constantly worrying about all the things that are falling apart because of this situation, right? So, yeah, I mean, I worry about things like who's our attorney general now? What's his name?
Jeff Sessions.
God, look at that.
Jefferson Beauregard.
Squinty, creepy. He looks like someone from the Addams Family. Like, he looks like there's like a particular like Southern version of the Addams Family that had like the creepy uncle or something that shows up with like weird eyes.
Does he show up in S-Town? Does that happen? I'm just curious.
It's actually the last half is all Jeff Sessions.
It's Sessions Town. Is that
yeah, they've renamed it. No, but like, you know, one of the things that made me optimistic kind of near the end of the Obama administration was there seemed to be kind of growing agreement that militarizing the police maybe is the wrong way to go about policing in the United States, right? And this Sessions guy is like, screw that. No oversight. And we're going to give them bombs and RPGs or something. I don't know. I would be unsurprised if police had mortars by the end of this administration, right? Like, it's just baffling. So there's lots of damage, I think, that's being done that's unseen. Yes. But we at least can enjoy a little bit of schadenfreude watching the criminology of hilarity go on in the back in the back streets there.
There's a lot of idiocy. Hopefully we will all learn a lesson from this as a country.
And that lesson is,
Don't vote for reality TV stars for president. That would be my lesson.
Or actors, or actors included in that.
Although I fear that now we're now we've like broken the seal and it's just going to be all reality TV stars all the time.
Oh yeah. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
We'll just like pick two rich people off a Shark Tank and run them on either side and just be like, which one do you want as president? That'll just be it. Mark Cuban against Mr. Wonderful.
Context Free is a contrarian content production. Find out more information at contextfree.fm along with our show notes. Our theme music is Chocolate and Cocaine by Lorenzo's Music. Find out more about Lorenzo's Music at lorenzosmusic.com.